The Lord reigns. Let the peoples tremble. He sits enthroned upon the cherubim. Let the earth quake. The Lord is great in Zion. He is exalted over all the peoples. Let them praise thy great and terrible name. Holy is he, mighty King, lover of justice. Thou hast established equity. Thou hast executed justice and righteousness in Jacob. Extol the Lord our God. Worship at his footstool. Holy is he. Our reading is entitled, Jesus, Our Friend, and the material is taken from the Gospel according to Luke and the Gospel according to John. Then drew near unto Jesus all the publicans and sinners to hear him. And Jesus answering said unto them, They that are whole need not a physician, but they that are sick.
I am
And him that cometh to me, I will in no wise cast out.
Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you.
As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you.
Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I call you friends, for all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known unto you.
I am pleased this morning to welcome as our leader in worship in this service, Chaplain Richard R. Bell, who is Chief of Chaplains at the U.S. Army base at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Southeastern Seminary has enjoyed since 1962 a special relationship to the chaplains at Fort Bragg in the extension courses for Protestant chaplains which we offer there. This year, this academic year, at the suggestion of Lieutenant Colonel Bell, we're offering, in addition to our regular extension courses for credit, two special seminar weeks for chaplains. Chaplain Bell is a Virginian. He holds the B.S. degree of Wofford College, the B.D. degree of Emory, and the M.A. from George Washington University. We hear him prayerfully and with gratitude. Chaplain Bell.
I am grateful for this opportunity. I have had the privilege of participating in the extension program at Fort Bragg, having taken the course under Dr. Tull, I believe, the 19th century theologians, and also having taken under Dr. Owens the preaching, and then currently under Dr. Newman his course on the problem of evil. I consider this morning this privilege rare indeed. Actually, having graduated from Emory, it is my first opportunity to speak to a seminary group. I have spent most of my life in the active pastorate, although in uniform for the greater portion of it, and consider the greatest privilege to serve a very select group of men who wear the uniform of our country in 46 different nations, and who today stand as a vanguard against the encroachment of godless communism are some perversions of that ideology. This morning, I want to share with you, since we are speaking to seminarians and ministers, what I consider to be perhaps the greatest challenge to the Protestant ministry of this day. I would take as my text some words from the 21st chapter of Revelation. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. How we have gotten to the place that we find ourselves as a nation and as a world through crucial and very critical experiences during the 20th century perhaps is known to all. The great conflicts, the rapid spread following the Russian Revolution of communism, the emergence of our nation from a nation of isolationism to one of world power, culminating in the assumption of the responsibilities which Britain was forced to give up in 1947. In Greece and Turkey, the Middle East. The casting of our lots with the United Nations, the discovery and use of nuclear energy, and lastly, to be a major participant in a Cold War which threatens to be unleashed into a hot one at most any moment. The Greeks had a rather consistent habit of portraying opportunity as a bald-headed man with one strand of hair on its forehead. This was done in order to tell or to instill into the Greek youth that when opportunity presented itself, one must take advantage of it or you would not be able to once it had passed you by. A disturbing picture to me, so frequently seen in our newspapers, drawn by some of our cartoonists, is a picture of a broken humanity sitting on the rubbles and wreckage of civilization, vainly wishing for the opportunity to do something and to have back again the opportunities which were theirs. Every one of you who are sitting here this morning know of what I speak. How many times, not once, but many times, you have wished for the opportunity which you have thrown away or misused. You wish that you had it back again. There isn't a single man in the ministry, particularly those who deal with the individuals for which we deal most prevalently. There isn't one who has not turned aside from a man or a woman and have known these people to have gone out wishing that we had taken an opportunity or more time with that person to have directed and guided under the opportunity and the chance which were ours. But we should not feel badly about this, that is, that we have missed these opportunities. For the more intelligent and thoughtful people of our generation and in every generation have been greatly disturbed by this. It is the careless and the thoughtless who are least disturbed. There is a picture in the Old Testament that I'd like to refer you to. You remember that Saul once had Samuel to guide him. In the crucial decisions that he had to make, he always called upon the old sky pilot, Samuel. But he discarded Samuel and then floundered along in his own growing misgivings and misfortunes and follies. And finally he reached a crisis. Samuel is dead. And he goes down to the cave and calls on the witch, "Bring me back Samuel." He wanted the chance over again that he had missed in the previous years. Now the basic problem, it seems to me, which underlies this is, and I'm sure that we would all agree, that if any man or any nation or any civilization has a fine chance, then let us make the most of it. It is fairly easy to keep an opportunity when we have it, but it is very difficult, desperately difficult, to recover one once it has passed us by. And I wish this opportunity and this point could be made plain to the people of the world in this problem of creating a new heaven and a new earth. This is true in our reputation and character, two sides of our life, isn't it? You take care of the first, and the second will take care of itself. If you had been on the docks of New York City in 1889, you had seen coming off an immigrant of one of the old liners, a hunchback man who long since had been diagnosed as incurable. Poor, friendless, hunched back. This youth rose with rare determination to a position of world leadership in electrical research and engineering. This man was Steinmetz, of whom Arthur Wallace said he had the mind of an angel and the soul of a seer. But he took advantage of the meager opportunities which were his and made the most of them. There was a friend of mine in college who was one of the leaders in our Christian movement in my church. I happen to be a Methodist. And today he is eking out an existence. He had a great light, a great opportunity. But today he's eking out an existence in the back alleys of New York City. And I never think of him that I do not think of this prayer, bring me back Samuel. Now, there is no one single thing, perhaps, which causes us to lose the opportunity. And as ministers, perhaps you and I are more susceptible to this than any other one thing. I'm sure that the first thing that comes to our mind is sin. But this is too general to be of value. To me, it is false optimism, or silly optimism, if you would. It seems to me, as I study civilization, that false optimism goes before we lose the chance we have. Now go back to Saul and Samuel again. If someone had said to Saul, when he discarded Samuel, Saul, you're going down to the cave and you're going to search the witch one of these days and you're going to ask for Samuel to come back to you. And Saul would have said, as you and I have said so frequently in the opportunities which have been ours in the ministry or any other activity of life, it's silly. You're crazy. And yet it seems to me that in our dealing with the souls of men, too frequently we are overly optimistic, a false optimism, silly optimism. And we have it as a nation. We say, how can we fail? We have wealth and health and security and creature comforts. We cannot but advance. But as I said, false optimism goeth before a lost chance. It seems to me that there are three areas I want to share briefly with you this morning where we as ministers have a great challenge and a great chance. One is, I think that we have the chance and the opportunity to prove that representative government is superior to the other governments of the world. Government of the people and by the people and for the people. And I mean this most sincerely. If you think that democracy or representative government is superior to communism and will always win out in its contact with humankind, you must rethink your thesis. All you have to do is to look at the areas of the world which have been swept by this godless ideology. We ought to take stock of ourselves. Perhaps you feel that you can give passive support to representative government, and like a drunk, everything will come out in the end. Imagine 100 years from now, America's going down to the cave and say, bring me back Samuel, give me another chance. Impossible, you say? I say inevitable, if we do not lose the false optimism. And all we have to do is turn back the pages a few years to France prior to World War II. The chance that is in our hands today, every one of you as an individual and as a citizen of our nation, do you not realize that Christianity once faced some secular-centered and mild, enthusiastic religious leaders? And it did not prove itself to be superior to the other ideologies of its day because it was superior within itself, but because of the appeal of Christ and the willingness of those people who were captured by Christ to stand up and to be counted for the cause. How do you, as a citizen of this country, stand in your thoughts and concepts of the superiority of representative government over the other forms of government? Consider again, too, if you will, The fact that you and I have the great opportunity to build a disciplined society, or to contribute to a disciplined society through our religious mission, our Christian responsibilities. Now, in an affluent society, we must have a different type of discipline than from an underdeveloped nation. Our discipline is one that we must be careful that we do not overeat and underwork, overenjoy ourselves and understudy, live an indulging life without compensating for it by wholesome living. It is here that we want to work less and receive more than any other nation perhaps on the face of the earth. For example, recently the children of Berkeley, West Virginia, were not permitted to go to school because a bus driver decided they wanted to go deer hunting. We've just passed through the most prosperous January in the history of our nation. Every newspaper is bulging with help wanted ads. I took a survey a few weeks ago during this month and found that in the Fayetteville, where we are located adjacent to, that a paper carried 36 ads which would employ 150 people. Another day there were 56 ads with more than 200 people, and on the same day the News and Observer carried 118 ads which would employ over 300 people. Yet 8 millions of our people are getting paid for loafing. Now it seems to me what is needed here in our own ministry and in our own nation is a need for self-discipline coupled with a pride of accomplishment in self-sufficiency in our economy. And without discipline, the fall of Rome and of Israel and the defeat and disintegration of Egypt and of Greece is but child's play. Can you not see both young and old 100 years from now going down to Endor's cave and saying, "Bring me back Samuel. Give me the chance which my forefathers did not take advantage of." And lastly, it seems to me that we have a great opportunity to convert the world to Christ. The whole of our communication system, in our personal lives and the exchanging of students throughout the nations of the world toward the spreading of the gospel of Christ. Recently, we have awakened to the fact that there are some oriental religions which are becoming enthusiastic and evangelistic. The Buddhists, for example, while there are other ancient religions which are dying out and leaving millions of youth void of any faith or trust in a supreme being. For example, in Korea alone, a nation of more than 25 million people, 85% of the people believe in nothing. And having worked with that nation for 2 years in its armed forces, many of the leaders, when I inquired of them, "In what do you believe?" they say, "I'm a blank." And with the tremendous communication systems we have and the exchange of students and the communication media, we have an opportunity, a chance to spread the gospel of Christ as no other generation has ever had. And it's time that we have a renaissance in our spiritual lives and in ethical Christianity in our own nation and in our own lives. And with this revival of Christianity in our own lives, we need to challenge the selfishness of every man and of every nation in building a new heaven and a new earth. There was a time, of course, when one felt he could handle his own fate, but not anymore. John Wesley said, "The world is my parish, and until we achieve this public spirit with some intelligence with Christ to make it attractive, I do not think that we have the capacity to take advantage of the chance which we have at our hands." And illustrations of this might be seen in an earthquake which struck Algiers a few more than 10 years ago, destroyed the oldest Christian church there, more than 16 centuries old. Today, Islam holds sway in Algiers, and it holds sway because in this part of the world, Christianity did not extend beyond the boundaries of the Roman Empire. They did not develop their spiritual worship in the liturgy and in the language of the people, and they did not convert and translate their literature to send it out beyond the boundaries. And today, in many areas, in this area particularly, the Christian church in North Africa cries out at Endor's Cave, "Bring me back Samuel." Now, if you think what I have said this morning sounds depressing, I do not mean it to be that. I make it as a sense of a lesson that I seek to leave with you, to appreciate your Samuel while you have him. How fortunate we Americans are. How fortunate especially are we Christian Americans. Homes and friends and reputation, character and opportunity. A magnificent chance is ours to build a better world, a new heaven and a new earth, by proving the superiority of representative government over communism, by developing a disciplined society in an affluent society, and by spreading and sharing the one great hope of mankind, Christ with all the world, through a Christ-centered and Christ-directed life. Let us pray. Eternal God, our Father, awaken our sleeping souls, that we will be disturbed by our own failures to take opportunities, advantage of the opportunities which are ours. Grant us, O God, a soul which is aflame for Christ, which is alert and alive to the opportunities which thou hast presented unto us as a nation, and more especially for calling us to be ministers of thy Son, our Savior, Christ. For it is in his holy name that we ask this prayer.